So we're talking about building high-functioning teams, developing high-functioning teams, and what I thought we would do is when is this supposed to finish? When is lunchtime? 1 o'clock. Okay. What I thought we would do, so we have about half an hour. We'll talk about some more kind of toolboxy type things for leading teams and stuff like that. And then I thought we would just have questions. There's going to be a Q&A this afternoon, but I thought we could have some questions here now, if you wanted, about any of the stuff we've talked about already or any of these things we're going to draw up. So that's the plan. I'm just going to set myself an alarm because, you know, I need to know these things. So we're finishing at 1, and so I'll set an alarm for, say, 12:45. We can have like 15 minutes of questions if there are any. Okay, so developing high-functioning teams. I just want to give you a whole bunch of tools and things that maybe are useful or maybe you won't find very useful. This was a bit of a coaching. Before I rub this off, do you want to talk about this? It's so obvious, but I really like it. This is like a coaching diagram. This is how we do all of our training, developing coaching in the ministries at my church. Maybe this will be really familiar to you, but it's I do, you watch, we talk. And it's a progression of I'm going to do less and less and less, and you're going to do more and more and more. I do, you help, we talk. You do, I help, we talk. You do, I watch, we talk. And this is just how we do training, developing. Lots of our training at our church is on-the-job training, and it works like this. Even just with very simple things, I was saying to the last team, you know, when it comes to like putting out the chairs, if you've ever done this, you've had someone be like, hey, can you just put the chairs out for me? And like, you know, how hard can it be to put the chairs out? But then if you've ever had that happen and then you need to go back after they've put the chairs out and you need to fix all the chairs and put them how they should have been, because it's actually not that simple to put the chairs out. You know what I mean? It's like, do I want the chairs in a semicircle like this? Do I want them in rows? Do I want them angled? Do I want a row, like an aisle in the middle? Like, I never want an aisle in the middle, in case you wanted to know. I always want two aisles, one either side, off center. And the reason is because I don't want to be standing talking to the empty floor in front of me. Like, I don't want an aisle there. I don't want to talk to empty seats in the middle. You know, so I want aisles on the sides, and how much room do I want between the rows? Because how much room there is between the rows dictates how many chairs we can fit in the room. Are we on a thing like this, or are we flat? If we're flat, I want the chairs not directly behind each other, so that everyone just looks at this guy's bald spot. Like, I want the chairs like this, so that we can look through the shoulders of each other and look and see the front. Like, it's complicated. There's a certain way to put the chairs out properly and well that's not just obvious. And so we would say, hey, I need someone to help put the chairs out. Would you be interested in turning up half an hour early and we'll put them out? Yep, keen, great, I'll see you half an hour early. Then we turn up. I'm like, I'll do these first few rows and you just watch and where I put them. I do the first ones and you just watch. Then we kind of talk about it. Here's what I was doing and why I like it. I don't like the middle row. I want it like this and this far apart. So now what I'll do, I'll put the first chair out for each row and I want you just to finish the row. And I'll just do the first one of each row. Great job. This is good. Let's go do the thing. See you next week, half an hour early. And then I'll start and I do the first row, like the first chair, and you finish the rows. And then I'm like, all right, can you just do the first chairs and I'll finish the rows? And now we do that, and it's great. And then next week, we arrive half an hour early, and you put the chairs out, and I just drag the stacks over, you know, just to help you, but you're putting them out. And we talk about it, and it's great, and now the chair putting out ministry is yours, and I know you'll do a good job, and I'm going to go off and do some other thing. And I've now released the chair putting out ministry, because it's not as simple as it sounds to you. Like, I do, you watch, we talk. I do, you help, we talk. You do, I help, we talk. You do, I watch, we talk. Yeah, that's, I just told the other guys that. So, here's some toolboxes for you for developing a high-functioning team. Have people seen this situational leadership quadrilateral before, this thing? Have people seen this? Some have, some haven't. So this is the life cycle of a team, right? Because every team is sort of like an organism, and it has a life cycle from when it starts to when it, not really kind of dies, but when it reaches its full maturity, let's say that. So you have, on the one side, down this side, is enthusiasm. Enthusiasm. And then down the bottom here, this is competence. And so when a team first starts, you've got, generally speaking, high enthusiasm, but you've got low competence. If this is sort of like an arrow. So we start with high enthusiasm, low competence. No one knows what they're doing, but we're all just excited to be here. And then as time goes on, we realize that we don't know what we're doing. And now we've got low enthusiasm and low competence. Because now I know I'm not competent, I don't know what I'm doing, and the shine is wearing off. So now we're here. This is kind of stage two of a team. And then stage three is now I'm getting competent, but I'm still a bit unenthusiastic because I don't realize how competent I am. You know, everything I still need to focus on. You just think about this as like learning to drive a car or, you know, teaching your children to drive a car. You know, they might start super enthusiastic, finally they're behind the wheel, but they don't know what's going on. They don't know how to do it. They don't know how to check their blind spot, but they're having a great time. But then they soon, once they're out onto the road, you know, they soon realize just how hard this is and how they've totally got no idea what's happening. And the enthusiasm begins to wane and they don't want to go out driving as much as they used to, you know, because now it's fear, it's all those things. But then they start getting quite good at it, you know, but they're very conscious. Like, I remember when I was learning to drive, you know, the blinker was just, it was very conscious, and checking the mirrors was a very conscious thing. Everything I had to concentrate, but I was doing it, but it was just really hard. That's kind of stage three. And then stage four is when I'm competent and I'm loving it and I'm not even really thinking about it. I become unconsciously competent. You know, I'm just having a great time. Sometimes I'm driving, I don't even know I'm driving. So, you know, like, you know, sometimes you suddenly realize that you're driving, and you're like, where am I? And you're like, oh yeah, like I'm almost home, great. Because you're thinking about something else, and you just unconsciously drove home. So that's kind of this. So this is just the life cycle of a team and how they function. And I wonder, you know, you might have a bit of a thought about where your team is at, or, you know, the team that you're in is at in this spectrum. You know, are they here or here as a team? It's pretty hard to do. You've got to kind of abstract a fair bit. Are they here? Are they here? Or are they individuals? You know, the team is here, but there's an individual who's back here. This is just like a bit of a tool to help you think through what's happening in your team and then what kind of leadership you might need to bring specifically, you know, to help them in that spot. Like when you're here, when the team is here, they need a highly directive kind of leadership, right? Just tell them exactly what they need to do. It feels a bit like micromanaging, but it's not. Like, it's what they need. Just tell me, I have no idea what I'm doing. Tell me exactly what you want me to do. Highly kind of directive. And then when you get here, they need a lot of coaching. You know, they need to know, I'm doing something wrong, how do I fix it? It's not as directive, now it's more that coaching thing. When they get here, they need a lot of encouragement, you know, because they're good at it. They can do it, but they don't feel like they can do it. So they need a lot of encouragement and faith and confidence from you, kind of like speaking it into them, because they don't have it themselves. And then when they get here, you're just like a cheerleader, you know, you just got to just tell them they're doing a great job and then help them find a new curve that they can kind of jump on to do the whole thing again. Otherwise, they'll get bored. You know, I get bored once I'm here. So I need like a new curve to jump on. So you might think about that and about your own kind of leadership, not just leading everyone and everything always the same. It's a bit of a dynamic process. And the team needs different kind of leadership from you than it does at the start or the end or in different quadrants. Does that make sense? All right, I want to do another thing with you. The people in your teams, they need clarity. This is another kind of little toolbox thing. Clarity and simplicity. Talked about this a lot, you know, yesterday, the importance of clarity and simplicity. Just draw on your page or somewhere, if you would, just two squares, because you're going to draw a drawing for me in a box. So just draw just two squares that you can draw something in. And I'm going to... Okay. I'm going to say a word, and then I want you to draw in the first box. Something's going to like just pop into your head. I want you just to draw as best you can what pops into your head. Does this make sense? I'll say a word. Just draw it. You ready? And I'm going to draw it too, and we'll see if our drawings are the same. Okay, the word is flower. Have you drawn your picture? Like a thing popped into your mind, and then now you've drawn it? Okay, the second word is daisy. Daisy. Are you ready? Can everyone see this? Now, who had the same drawings that I did? Who had something different? Did anyone draw a bag of flour? You thought about it? Did you draw something different? You drew a bag. Did anyone else draw a bag of flour? A cow. Wow. That is so awesome. All right. So someone drew a bag of flour and someone drew a cow. Did it look like this? That's a cow from the back. Okay, right. So the point of this is that, you know, I said flower, and what I meant was like a sunflower or like a daisy type flower. That's what I meant. But some of you heard flower. And the reason why this happens, the reason why it's so fun, is because like just the clarity of language is so important. Because we're telling people to do stuff, and I think I've said it as clearly as I can, a flower. But, you know, you could have drawn anything. You could have drawn a rose. You could have drawn a bird of paradise. You could have drawn all kinds of different flowers. But that's not what I wanted you to draw. I wanted you to draw like a flower like this. And so just how hard it is, how important it is for us to get clarity in our language about what we're expecting the people that we're leading to do for us and what we're asking them to do just exactly is important. Because they'll do what they think we're after or what they think we were after, but that's not what we wanted. But that's not their fault, right? That's my fault. Because I wasn't clear enough with what I was asking you to do. And so then, how can you do it? Here's the questions that I ask the people that I lead and the things that I make sure that they know. It's number one is, what is it that I want from them? And we have like a conversation about that. What is it that I want from them? Generally speaking, I ask them to tell me or to write up, and then we talk about it. Here's what I think you want from me. This is the person, you know, like channel guy. Here's what I think you want from me. And then he then brings it, and then we talk about it. So what do I want from them? Question number two is, what should they prioritize? Because there's lots of things that I want them to do. And then there's lots of new things that I want them to start or try, or we're going to do this or whatever. But what should they prioritize? So every year, the rhythm of my teams is at the beginning, we have one or two foci for the year. These are the things that we're going to focus on. These are the priorities. That everything else is important, and we got to do all the things just to keep rolling. But if time crunches in and life crunches in and we got to focus on something, I want you to focus on this thing or this area or this initiative. Depends on what it is. Sometimes it's a new thing. Sometimes it's just a steady state thing. But here's the priority. Here's the focus. Question number three is just, what are the basic things that you need to do? I want them to break down into just clear things. What are the six basic components of what you do? Or whatever it is, the four components, the five components. Just what are those things? Because then what I do with them is we break down those into the six things that just they need to do to make something roll, like say the youth ministry. You know, we've got like some of the components are leader morale and training. And then another one would be like the group time, the actual group time, the ministry time. We've got like the kind of, what do we call it? Invitations. These are the sort of the, are people inviting friends? Are we sharing the message of Jesus and inviting students to respond? Like, are we doing that bit? Just the kind of like the trellisy stuff, money, set up, pack up, that kind of stuff. We list them all out, and then we do what I call gyrating, which is green, yellow, red rating, like GYR rating. I'll sit down with Mark and we have these things, or I sit down with Miles or whoever, and we have their operational objectives, you know, like the broken up their role. And then I'll just be like, okay, let's rate each of these areas. Green for it's going fine, good. Yellow for it's not great, but it's not bad. And then red if it needs some work now. And I was like, so just rate them. I'll rate them. You rate them. And then we'll just talk about them. And it's a way just to monitor. We already know what you're supposed to do. How are these areas just kind of rolling? And so then we gyrate. And we then have a conversation to talk about. We do that once a month for a staff. For a volunteer, we do it once a term. And we just kind of monitor. And that just, what I'm trying to do is just bring clarity. So there's the decision-making clarity that we did yesterday, and then there's this kind of operational clarity. What are they supposed to be doing? And we gyrate. What should they prioritize? And what do I want from them? So that's kind of just some things on clarity just to help you. And then last of all, and then we'll do some questions if there are any, the two foundations of building a strong team. These are the two just absolute fundamental things, in my opinion. One is the stability of the team. And what I mean by that is three specific questions. Number one, can they trust you? Number two, do you care about them? And number three, are you committed to this? They're the three questions that the people in your team are asking. Maybe not consciously, but they're asking them. Can they trust you? Do you care about me? And are you committed to this? And when I say trust, the trust I mean, there's two kinds of trust, the way that people talk about it. There's predictive trust, which is like, will you do what you said you would do? Like the meeting's on at 3, and then do you turn up at 3? That's predictive trust. That's not special, right? That's just like a permission to play. Like if you don't do what you say you'll do, then we're already going to have problems from the start, right? That's not a particular thing. The trust that the people on your team need, they need predictive trust, but what they really need is vulnerability trust. And that is, the team has the kind of trust where they can say, I don't know how to do that. You're better at that than I am. Can you help me with this? If the team can say those kind of things and be vulnerable but still have the trust in the team that no one's going to look down on them if they say, you're better at that than I am. Can you help me? I need you to teach me how to do that. If the team can say that and still know that they're going to be respected by the rest of the team and not be looked down upon, that's the kind of trust that the team needs to really start to function, right? Vulnerability trust. And then when it comes to, do you care about me? Here's the crazy thing, right? Did you know that your brain, for your brain to work, it needs three things. This is like scientifically, it needs three things. Oxygen, glucose, and relationships. Obviously oxygen, right? So like breathing is a key leadership skill. I recommend it. Like you need to eat food because you need like sugar to run your brain. But your brain also needs relationships to work. They did this thing. They found an orphanage in like somewhere in Europe. I don't know where it was, like a dark place of Europe. They found this orphanage where there was just kids in cots. It was like a farm. It was just like cots of orphans. And the people who worked there, they just like fed them and watered them like they were just like cattle in these cots, fed them, watered them, worked their way through, and that was all. The kids never got really talked to. They never got touched, hugged, nothing. No relationships at all. They found this orphanage and they, you know, like rescued these kids. And then they scanned their like they scanned their brains to find out what was happening in their brains. And their brains had this like massive dark patches where there were no neurons. Like their brains were just literally empty in certain parts because they hadn't had relationships. They hadn't had physical touch. That no one had hugged them. And so their brains hadn't grown. But they'd been fed and watered, and they were healthy in one sense. Because your brain, to work, literally, scientifically, needs oxygen, glucose, and relationships. And they keep on doing heaps of research, and it all comes back the same. Your brain needs relationships in order to work. And so the people on your team need relationships in order to be fully functioning, high-functioning members. They need more than just to be fed and watered. They need relationships in the team. So, can I trust you? Do you care about me? Are you committed to this? That's the kind of stability that your team needs. The second foundational thing is time. Your team just needs time. And there's no way around it. You can't short-circuit it. It needs to do... Where's my whiteboard? It needs to do, you know, that curve thing. That it just takes time. You can't fast-forward it. The team needs time with each other to build those kind of relationships. And if you can give the team time with each other and time with you, then they're those foundational pieces. I mean, it's not rocket science, but it's easy to skip over some of those things. Trust, care, commitment, time. It's easy to skip them and then wonder why the team's not as high functioning as it should be. All right, that's perhaps enough. There is 10 minutes before lunch. Do you want to clarify anything that either anything here or anything from the other toolboxes or pipeline things? There's a chance to Savo to do it. Yeah.
The question, so you give us the chair setup and how you would help somebody do that. What if you gave over the job, you did all the proper things, you gave over the job, and the next week you come in and all the chairs are in a different way?
Yep.
And you like them. What have you done or had to do, or what would you do in that?
Yeah, yeah.
Situation?
Great. Yeah, it's like... Yeah, what if I've done my triangle thing and it went fine and then I came back next time after I'd handed it over and it was changed, a mess.
They put it in a circle.
Put it in a circle. Yeah, right. Right. What would I do? Well, first of all, I would think I have done something wrong. Like, what have I missed? Like, what have I always think, what's my responsibility in this? And so then I'm probably going to think I may not have done my decision-making clarity thing. I may not have explained to them that that's not their authority to make that decision. This is how it needs to be done. So I would probably apologize that I wasn't clear and that we need them like this and explain again why I want them like that and then ask them, does that make sense? That'd be basically what I would do. That would be like a... We would have a conversation about it. But I would apologize for not being clear, re-clarify what I want and why I want it, and ask them, does that make sense? And then let's do it next time. That'd be the basic gist.
Is there a possibility of another line? The last line you had was, you do, I watch. And this is a situation of you do, I'm not watching.
Yeah.
Are you still doing it okay?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So when you're able to do it completely without me being around, then we know you're off and running.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Maybe there needs to be another you do, I don't watch, we talk.
Yeah. And then there's an expectation that we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
How they're doing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. That'd be the general. I would talk about it with them. And it needs to be done the way that needs to be done. Because there are good reasons for it. But they obviously don't understand those reasons. And that's my fault. I haven't communicated them, obviously. Because I figure people want to do a good job. Yes?
Craig, more of a general question.
Yeah, that's right.
I am pretty much in that sort of a role, although our nomination team works slightly differently. Leadership takes a lot of time, and leadership coaching takes a lot of time.
Yes.
What do you feel would be the best situation in the largest, middle to largest sort of a church, that the senior pastor is the one who's the leadership coach, or that he sort of takes a step back and just focuses on what he focuses on and someone else does, and how does that work?
Yeah. Yes, that's a great question. Yeah, in my church, the boss, he's such a humble man. Right, and I think he knows that this is not his strength, like leadership, and you know this. That's not his strength. He knows that, and you know he has. You could imagine a senior minister with the guy in his church who wrote the book on leadership. That could be a very anxious setup. So he's a very humble man, and he and I have a relationship where he knows that I am for him. Like, I'm not trying to take over, I'm not trying to undermine him. He knows that out in amongst the church, like, I'm his fan, and I will back him, and even when I don't agree with the things that we've done, he knows that I won't badmouth it. I'll try and explain it as best I can. Blah, blah, blah. So he has real trust. And I think if that's the case, then I think it can work, obviously I think it can work, for the senior minister not to be the leadership driver in the church. But he's totally with me in that sense. Like, I'm with him and he's with me, that when it's a leadership thing and we're going to do it, then he's behind it, talks positively about it, we're doing this, it's very important, etc. So I think it's that relationship that's most key. If that relationship is dysfunctional, then this setup does not work. I think if a senior minister can take the lead in terms of leadership, that it would be for the best, even if they're not the best leader in the world, it makes sense, I think, as a general rule, for the senior leader to take point and do that. My circumstance is probably slightly idiosyncratic in the sense that I wrote the book. So it's a bit harder, I think, for that to work. Does that answer your question? I definitely said some things. yeah, down here, and then we'll go up the back.
Really prosaic question, but you talk about, for example, you sit down and write out your things with one of your leaders, what you want to do, and so on and so forth, and then 6 months later, or maybe a year later, you come back and reprioritize or...
Yep. Yep, that's a great question. So I have all these bits of paper with stuff written on it. How do I keep track of it all? I have a Word doc that has all of the operational objectives, priorities for all of the ministries just in one doc. So that's number one. Number two is when I meet with my people, I was saying this, I don't think to you, I think it was to the last group, I just have the same meeting structure every time I meet with every person, because I don't have the brain space to make a new agenda for every person, for every meeting. I just can't do it. So what I do is, it's the same. I meet with you. The questions are, how's things? How's the ministry? Like, are we doing what we're trying to do? And then here's my things that I think we need to look at. And it's those three things. And then I meet with you, same thing. How's things? How's the ministry? Here are my things. I have a notebook where I meet with you, and on the right-hand page, I write down the things that we talked about. Here's how you are, here's how the ministry is, and here are my things, 1, 2, 3, or whatever. And then on the back of that page, so then when we turn over the page, I write on the left-hand side, the back of that page, the things that you were going to do this week. So Ben was going to do A, B, C. Because then next week, I rock up with you. I have your notebook. I just open it up. I know we're going to do how's things, how's the ministry. And I look on the left-hand page. Here are the things that you said you were going to do. And I just say, how did that go? How did that go? How did that go? And then we have our conversation, you know. How's things? How's the ministry? How did these things go? Here are my things. Back of that page, here are the things that Ben's going to do. 1, 2, 3. Close the book, never think of it again. Until
you have a book for
each person. Yeah. Yep. Each regular meeting person. And that's just the structure. 1, 2, 3. Here are the things you were gonna do. And then I just put it away. Often I lose it. And then the morning I'm like, where's the book? Where's Ben's book? Find Ben's book. Go to the meeting. Haven't looked at it. Have no idea what's in there. Can't remember. Open it up. Oh, good. There's the things that Ben was going to do. And then the same thing. How's things? How's the ministry? How did this go? Here's my things. And that's the rhythm. Because then what ends up happening is you start to learn that rhythm. So, like, sometimes when I meet with Miles, I don't even ask him anything. He sits down, he's like, so here's life, and here's how, like, here's my wife, Morgan, she's going good, and this is going fine, and I'm really tired, and so anyway, the ministry, here's what's happening in the youth world, and he just kind of just, he rolls through, and he's like, and so, what things do you have we should talk about? And he just, like, runs the meeting, because he knows the structure, he knows what I'm going to ask. Now, I'm not saying that's the best way to do it, but it's simple, and I can remember it pretty easy. And it requires just, like, no prep. So I don't have time for that. Rory, do you have a question?
Just ripping on that last bit, previously, so do you think, would you say, as senior pastor, given that you must, you know, pray to do this, and you do the other stuff, or do you think there is a trajectory where you think, okay, my job is now to help others succeed, and I bow out of those things?
Uh-huh. Like, should the senior minister still be the preacher, and is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Like I think a lot of leadership happens from the pulpit. Not all of it, but a lot of it. So that's important. And my opinion, it's not like it's from the scriptures or anything, I don't think. My opinion is that the senior minister should be preaching regularly at the church. I think that's right. Like, our church has a rotating roster of preachers. The boss preaches the most, probably half the time. I preach the next amount of time. And then there's others who kind of then fill in. And a lot of the leadership of the church, the culture setting, all that stuff happens from his preaching. And so I think that's a thing that he needs to do. And part of what I do is I take things off of him that he doesn't need to do or that he's not as good at doing so that he can do those things that he needs to do that I can't or shouldn't do. I shouldn't set the tone for our church. But I can talk with him and we can talk and but then he needs to be the one who sets that tone. I don't know, is that answering kind of what you... That's what I think. Yeah, that's how it works at our church anyway. I think it's almost lunchtime. So maybe we can pause there. There's Q&A this afternoon. If we didn't talk about anything that we should have, we can talk about it there. Should I pray for lunch?
Yes, please.
That'd be a good... I would like to pray for lunch. Heavenly Father, we just thank you so much for the ministry that we have, that you have given us in the Lord Jesus. We thank you for this conference and all that we've been hearing from your word and how we've been thinking about our own leadership and some concrete, gritty, on-the-ground thoughts. Father, we just pray for all of our churches that you would help us to proclaim the Lord Jesus well and clearly, that we would be faithful to your word, that we would love people like they need to be loved, and that we would love them and love our church in the way that we lead and in how we treat people and run things and structure and clarity and all those things, that we would love people well in those things too. And we thank you for lunch. We thank you for all the things that you have given us. We thank you for the food that we'll eat. And we think of those people who don't have as much as we do. And we ask that you'd be a provider for them as well. In Jesus' name, amen.